this is Lloyd Price, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Ben E. King, and you're listening to my friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hey, Mike, John Mathis.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Darling Love, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Baby, you walked out on me, leaving me in misery. Now you want me back again, but I've got news for you, my friend. I wanna know, do you want me?
Yeah.
Do you love me?
Yeah.
Do you need me?
Yeah.
A real bad.
Yeah.
A real bad
yeah.
Thing. Beg me.
Beg
me.
Beg
me. Beg me. In the morning. Beg me. In the evening. Beg me. Like you're down on your knees. And let me hear you say, I want you to beg me. Once I loved you desperately, what a hold you had on for me. Now you left me sad and blue, but now the table's turned on you. Tell me, do you want me?
Yeah.
Do you love me?
Yeah.
You sure you need me?
Yeah.
I'm that bad. A real bad thing, baby. Baby, baby, baby. Morning, baby. Evening, baby. Got you down on your knees. And let me hear you say, baby, I want you to baby. But you left, and now I'm free. I want to know, do you want me?
Yeah.
You sure you need me?
Yeah.
Do you love me?
Yeah.
Real bad,
yeah.
Real bad.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guest on the show, what can I say, R&B icon and legend, Mr. Chuck Jackson. How you doing, Chuck?
I am fine, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great.
I like that. You are great. I like that.
I am. Life is good. Life is good. You know, it's
sure
good.
Is.
It's good in Florida. I'm tired of New York weather, you know. but let's talk about Chuck. So you were born where, Chuck?
Yeah. I was born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Shipped to my grandmother when I was 18 months. A lot of people have been mixed up because I was so young when I went to South Carolina.
I got you. I was going to ask you the difference between North and South Carolina, but I'm not going to even do that now.
I ran away to Pittsburgh when I was about 14.
Uh-huh.
And I had a scholarship to college, a musical scholarship, and I went to Pittsburgh and I stayed a couple of years. I did not drop out of school. I ran away, but I still went back to school.
Oh, great.
And when I was going into my the latter part of my junior year, I found out that I had to graduate from the school that I got the scholarship from in South Carolina. So I went back to South Carolina and finished my high school and took the scholarship to college.
Wow. I mean, that's a great thing because, you know, as much as I liked to sing, because I went to CW Post College, And my first year, I was singing with a group, and we were signed to MGM Records and all of that. And I flunked out my first year. My father almost killed me, and I asked him for money to record an album. He said to me, "I have money to get your ass back in school, but I have no money for music. Goodbye." You know, was there music in your family growing up?
No, not really. I grew up, my grandmother was like a church person.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was it. We went to church at least 3 times a week.
All right.
And I started to listen to the choir when I was very, very young. And then I learned how to play the piano.
Oh.
And I wound up at about 11, I started playing piano for the choir.
Wow.
And that's how I just sort of slipped into singing, you know.
I know.
But I always, since I can remember, I've always been an opera bug. I'm just...
Wow.
I just love opera.
Wow.
And that's how I got my scholarship to college. I was singing in the choir at school, and we had a contest, and we won the contest, and the song that we sang was The Holy City.
Okay.
And at the end of that song, the music instructor told me I would always try to hit this high note, operatic note.
Uh-huh.
And she said, "Don't do that, you know, at this contest, don't do that." She said, "Because you're going to get us fired." So we went on, and this is South Carolina. So we had, at this particular, this particular time, it was in Conway, South Carolina.
Right.
And it was the finals. And they had 5 elderly white women. and we're singing, and we get to the end of the song, and I looked at those 3 women, and I hit this note.
Good for you.
And I saw a lady, one of the ladies took a handkerchief out of her purse and started to wipe her eyes.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at my music instructor, who was looking at me like she was going to kill me. But she told me not to do that. But anyway, at the end of the day, we won the contest. And about a month later, my principal called me to the office, and these 3 women had got together and gotten a music scholarship for me out of college in South Carolina.
Wow.
That did not give music. They didn't have a music department.
Mm.
But they talked them into to accepting me, and I was the first musical scholarship. I went to school on the first musical scholarship at South Carolina State.
Wow! What's the moral?
That's how my whole life began.
The moral of that story is always go for the high note if you got it.
That's it. That's it.
You know?
That's it.
It's like hitting the home run to win the game. You know, in the 10th inning. It's like, you know, I mean. I was hoping that the story ended that way because, you know, I wanted you to hit the high note. If you had said to me, "I decided not to do it," I would have been disappointed.
Actually just not having my lunch, and I was thinking
that
some of the things that I did today, I don't know how I did them, but I just kept moving. I was always moving.
Right.
And that's how my whole career started. I was just always moving. When I went with the Dell Vikings,
right.
I went into this store, a record store, and
right.
This man was the manager of the store, the owner of the store. And I started talking to him about singing, and he said, "Then sing a song for me." And I sang Roy Hamilton's "You'll Never Walk Alone."
Uh-huh.
And he immediately recorded me.
Wow. You know,
it's
amazing how many people I talk to that tell me that Roy Hamilton never got the kind of attention that he should have gotten.
Oh, no, he didn't. And we became, you know, he was one of my, him and Caruso. Caruso was my favorite. But Roy was my, oh, God, I just loved him. And I had the pleasure of meeting him and becoming friends.
Wow.
Before he passed.
Wow, that's amazing. Tell me the story, because I knew Dave Lurchy and I knew a lot of the Vikings, you know, and what a great group. How did you get involved with that?
Well, like I told you, the guy that that owned the store, he was the Dell Vikings manager. And one day I went to the store, and he said to me, how would I like to sing with the Dell Vikings? I said, what? You got to be kidding. So he said that, you know, they were in the service.
Right.
All of them was in the service.
Uh-huh.
And two of them, Lurchy and the two white guys, they were being shipped to Germany.
Right.
So they had to get, you know, two more guys. So he asked me, would I audition for it? So I did, and the guys loved me, and that's how I got the job.
No, that's pretty cool. And you did record with them, as I know.
Yes, I did.
Right. Yep. And how many tunes did you record from them? Do you remember?
I was on, oh, God, a lot of them. But yeah. I actually recorded lead. I did a song called Come On and Love Me.
Uh-huh.
Come on!
Well, there was a song called Willette that I
yeah,
heard.
That was,
yeah.
Yeah. That was the song I wrote.
Ah.
Yeah.
Ah, that's great. Yeah.
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
When I got to Pittsburgh, when I ran away from South Carolina, I was determined to finish school no matter what.
Right.
So I started going to the school not that far from, I live with my aunt in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And I started going to the school, Fifth Avenue High School. And I was completely lost because the whole structure of the way the school was run, I guess I can say it that way, in Pittsburgh,
right,
was completely different than the South.
Right. I hear you.
And go ahead.
I hear you.
I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anything. And this one girl who sat in front of me I kind of liked her. And we started talking. And one day she said, asked me to come by her house. So I went by, we would walk from school together. So I went by her house. And she said, I think I see what your problem is, and I'm going to help you with your homework from now on.
Wow.
And she started to help me, and I started to get better and better. And this went on for about, let's see, I was in ninth grade. So, 9th, 10th, that went on for 2 years. And then I had to go back to South Carolina to finish my last 2 years in order to get the scholarship. So when I left, I just missed her so much. And, you know, we didn't make no calls then, you know, because
of
cost.
Right, right.
So I didn't really talk to her for 2 years.
Mm.
And when I got back, there was a lady that lived not that far from my aunt, and she would always let me play her piano. So I went into her house one day, and I was thinking about this girl. Her name was Willette. And I loved Danny Boy. And I started to play Danny Boy on the piano. And then I started to write some lyrics down. And I wound up writing this song about Willette that I went away a long, long time ago. I left a girl. I left her there to stay. Will she remember me that day when I return? Willette, I do. I love you. Yes, I do. And that's sort of, that was the structure of the song. And that's it. That's how it happened.
I went away. A long, long time ago, I left a girl. I left her there to stay. Will she remember me that day when I return? Will that I do? I love you. Yes, I do. But now I'm back. Give me one more chance. The things we did every day, the places we went. If you love me, you'll tell me that you
stuff up. The other great thing is, you know, I play guitar since I'm a kid. To have that point of reference musically when you're a vocalist and everything is gives you so much more of an edge, you know, as far as what's going on, because I mean, it's because you have that point of reference. musically.
Exactly.
It's great.
Exactly. If you don't play an instrument and you're a singer, you got some problems.
Right. You know, I mean, I know about all the guys that just hear it, but even, I mean, I do a lot of harmony arranging and all of that. I mean, to be able to take the chord and say, okay, here's the chord, here's the triad, this is your note, this is your note, this is your note. You know how many street corner groups I've been in where, you know, I'm listening and I'm saying, that note is not in the chord. And the guy says, well, this is the way we've been singing it for years. Well, it's discord, man. It's not in the chord. Here's the chord.
And, I know.
You know.
You know, another story. My first, Jackie Wilson discovered me while I was Ripperdale biking.
Tell me about that.
Well, we were on a small tour. And we were playing, let me back up. I was in Pittsburgh at the time. This is after, you know, I had joined the Del Valle. And I saw a sign one day that said Jackie Wilson was going to be at this club.
Uh-huh.
And basically, you had to be 21 to get into the club, and I was only about 19 then.
Uh-huh.
And but I went, and he had a matinee, and I snuck into the matinee, and I heard this man singing. Oh, God, that was the beginning of my life.
You bet.
And after the show, I made my way back to his dressing room. How I got there, I don't know. But I got in and I told him, you know, how much I appreciated him and his vocal ability.
Right, right.
Because his range was incredible.
Yep.
So he was so wonderful. And about a month later, I found out that we were on a small tour. And that we were going to be playing the Howard Theater in Washington, D.C., and
right.
Jackie Wilson was the headliner.
Mm.
And, oh, my God, that just made my year.
Right.
So we're doing the show, and one day, one of his guys came to my drive dressing room and said, Mr. Jackson, Mr. Wilson would like to see you. So I went to his dressing room, and he said, have a seat, and I sat down. He said, you know, you remind me of myself so much, he said, so I'm going to say something to you. He said, I've been watching you all week.
Uh-huh.
He said, I was in a group also.
Right.
And someone came to me one day and said, what I'm going to say to you now. He said, you are not a group singer. You are a soloist.
Wow.
He said, and I'm going to be opening the Apollo Theater in 1 month. And he gave me the date. He said, and if you're there, I will put you on my show.
Oh.
And see if we can't find, you know, someone that will book you, you know, that will record you.
Right.
So we went to the, I went to the Apollo Theater and met him there. And while I was there, one day, these two people came back to my dressing room, and it was Florence Greenberg and Luther Dixon.
Right.
And they own Scepter Records.
Well, I'll tell you something. I spoke to Wally Roker last week.
Hello, everybody. This is Wally Roker of the original Heartbeats. 1,000 miles away, crazy for you, down on my knees, on and on and on. We love you. And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Oh, my God.
And he told me to give you his regards, and he filled my ear with all of that, but I want to let you tell the story the way it went down. So please do that.
Yeah, so they came back to my dressing room, and they said, you know, that they saw my show, and they loved it, and was I signed to, you know, any record company? And I said, no, and they said, well... And what had happened that week, I had some people come back to see me from Atlantic and RCA, and they said that they gave me their cards and said, you know, if you feel up to it, give us a call.
Right.
So, and they said that they would give me an advance if I signed with them.
Wow.
So Florence Greenberg said to me, she said, we know that some other companies have been back to see you. She said, and those companies are much larger than we are. She said, we cannot offer you any front money. She said, but what we'll do, we'll give you your own label.
Uh-huh.
and I immediately took it. And I didn't care anything about the front money, just because I have my own label, and they created Juan.
Right,
so it became Scepter Juan.
I remember that because basically, I'm going to tell you a Luther story. There was a club down here in Lauderdale called Dino Pete's. It was owned by a good friend of mine, Spanky Pianegro, and he named it after his two sons. And Luther, for years, it was the mecca of R&B and doo-wop in southern Florida. And Luther, mm-hmm. Luther had his own chair at the bar, and he would sit there and he would sip beer. And, you know, of course, the guys in the business knew who he was, and we would tell people, that's Luther Dixon, man. He wrote all the Shirelles hits. He wrote 16 Candles. He wrote this. He wrote that. And they would go, come on. And you'd sit with Luther. People would come up to him, and he was so humble and everything. And it was Luther, man, the legendary Luther. Of course, you know, he passed away.
It's been about almost 4 years ago now.
Wow, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I talk to Shirley all the time. And,
oh, that's my girl.
Oh, yeah, what a sweetheart, you know.
Yes.
Hi there, I'm Shirley Austin Reeves, the original lead singer of the Shirelles. And you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Great, give me one more.
Nope. Okay. Hello there. I'm Shirley Austin Reeves, the original lead singer of the Shirelles, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Hi, Mike. How you doing, baby? Love you, Mike.
You know, it's a funny thing. I was sitting here last night, uh-huh. and I was watching an ad with some of the doo-wop and the classical singers back in the day.
Right.
And I'm sitting here, and I see the Flamingos.
Ah.
And I just talked to Tommy Hunt, who's in England.
I know that, yep.
Yeah, and Nate, who was the lead singer.
Uh-huh.
Nate and I were good friends.
Wow.
But I want to just go back and say something, if
sure.
I may.
Sure, sure.
On my way to the Apollo, I had a month, but I had my car, and I drove from Washington to Philadelphia.
Right.
And there was a disc jockey there. His name was Georgie Wood.
Uh-huh.
And Georgie and I were very good friends, and he had an assistant who I was dating.
Uh-huh.
And I'm coming back through Philly, so I'm going to stay at her house before I go on to New York.
Right.
And I went by there. And I knocked on the door, and nobody answered the door. So I thought that was strange, you know. And so I remember she kept a key under the floor mat.
Uh-huh.
So I looked down, and there was the key. So I opened the door, and I heard this noise. And I said, are you here? What's going on? So I walked back through the bedroom, and the window was open. And I said, oh, my God, what is going on? And then I looked down, and we were on the second floor. I looked down, and I see this man running up the alley. So this guy was in the house. And I find out years later that that guy was Nate, the lead singer with the Flamingos.
No
and
kidding.
She was dating him, too.
Wow.
And he knew yep. that she was dating me.
Wow.
But let me tell you now, okay, let me just leave that there for a second.
Sure.
When I get to New York and Luther and Florence came back and asked me to sign with them, and I signed, Luther asked me one night to come to his house, and we're going to sit down and do some writing.
Right.
So I went to his house, and I'm sitting at the piano, and we're talking, and he said, Chuck, he said, I want you to give me some ideas so we can, you know, for instance, what's one of the worst things that ever happened to you as far as a female is concerned? And I'm thinking, and I said, oh, I know. I said, just before I came to New York, I was in Philadelphia, and I told him about the story.
Uh-huh.
And this guy running up the alley when I went in the house. He said, but how did you feel when you cared so much about her and then you see that she's dating someone else? How did you feel, Chuck? I said, well, I didn't want to cry. He said, that's it.
No kidding.
He said, that's it. And we wrote, I Don't Want to Cry.
I still love you just like I did before.
But before you smile and walk through the door, darling, I don't want to cry. Come and go like the morning sun. I was so serious, but you were having fun. Now, baby, now I don't wanna cry. I don't wanna cry no more. No, darling, no more. Welcome to my lips. Welcome to my arms, oh, welcome to my mind and heart. Girl, you are welcome to everything I have to offer you. So come on and not take it, take any part. Yeah, 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 now, mama, I know I've been wrong. Come on home, but before you get here, I don't wanna cry. I don't wanna cry no more. No, darling, no more. Come on, walk on in. Walk on in. You can come on in, baby, 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 walk on in.
It's funny because a good friend of mine is Terry Johnson from the Flamingos. He lives not far from me, and we see them all the time. You know, they're
I was a very good friend of that group.
A lot of people have come to Florida. As a matter of fact, Herman Santiago just moved down to Lauderdale. You know,
wow,
and you know it's getting pretty good down here as far as being like. You know, the old home for guys that are still shaking their tail on stage, you know.
Well, you know, I just talked to Valerie Simpson, and she just bought some property down there.
Wow. Now, she played piano for you for a while. Isn't that true?
Well, no, actually what happened was Valerie and Nick did some writing for me in the beginning, for me and Maxine. As a matter of fact, when Florence and Luther turned down the song that they took to Motown and wound up with Tammy Terrell and Marvin Gaye.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
So you went with Wand. I read somewhere that you went because it was a family atmosphere. Was that true?
It really was. It really was. And that me being from the South, you always looking for that comfort. And that's what I felt with Scepter.
Right. You know, well, there were some pretty good people I know with Scepter, and they did produce a lot of hits. What was the first tune that you did with Scepter? Do you remember?
Actually, it was I Don't Want to Cry.
Aha. Uh-huh. And
Luther and I wrote that. That's what I'm saying. He wanted to write something for my first release.
Wow.
And that's how we got together, and I told him the story, and we wrote I Don't Want to Cry.
And did you know what you had when you left the studio?
No, I didn't. But I did know that it was a good product. I knew that. And I also knew that Luther and Florence, if there was a possibility, they would make it happen.
I gotcha. I'm going to tell you something about a friend of mine. He wishes he was sitting right next to me. His name is Shelly Brill, and I sang with him when I was with the Mystics for a bunch of years. But he's been down here for years, and he sings with a group called the Fabulons. He's got a lot of soul, and he's a great front man. We call him the soul guy. He is a Chuck Jackson fan of the 10th degree. And there is nobody on this planet like Chuck Jackson. I mean, you know, you could bring everybody that ever sang in the game. But to him, Chuck Jackson is the best, and he knew that we were going to do this today. He is just one of those diehard Chuck Jackson fans, period.
Well, thank God for him. Thank God.
Yeah, he sings a pretty good I Don't Want to Cry on his own, too. As a matter of fact, and I think we did record that with the group because I produced three CDs with them. I think we do have that on a CD somewhere, believe it or not. You know?
Wow.
I Wake Up Crying, that was a Burt Bacharach tune, right?
Lieber and Stoller, wasn't it?
I don't know. You know better than I do.
I think it was Lieber and Stoller.
Oh, interesting, interesting.
Yeah, Burt did the arrangement.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Interesting. Well, you know, Lieber and Stoller, that's good company, too. I mean,
oh, yeah, you know, they were wonderful. You know, I mean, I was...
We're
still close. I'm sorry Mike is not with us anymore.
Yeah, I know. I always marvel at the story that Jay and the Americans told me that when they first went in to audition for Lieber and Stoller, what happened was they passed on them. And Kenny Vance, who was Kenny Rosenberg, of course, at that time, his mother told him, you go back there the next day and you tell them that they made a big mistake. And they went back there and they knocked on the door and they said, yeah. And they said, my mother said you made a mistake. You have to listen to us again. And they did and they signed them. So.
Wow.
Listen to your mother.
That's right. And don't give up.
Well, it's funny because Vanilla Ice is my neighbor here in Wellington, and he has that commercial out. It says, word to your mother. Well, word to your mother.
That's right.
You know? Not...
I wake up crying after tossing and turning.
Do you remember that?
No, of course.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
It was the name of the album.
Uh-huh. So that produced some very good tunes, I would imagine.
Yes.
I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself is more of a standard, right?
Yeah, that was Tommy.
Right.
Tommy Hunt. I covered that.
Uh-huh.
I just don't know what to do with myself. Don't know just what to do with myself. I'm so used to doing everything with you. planning everything for two. And now that we're through, oh, I just don't know what to do with my time. I'm so lonesome for you, it's a crime. Going to the movies only make me sad. Parties make me feel as bad when I'm not with you. Oh, I just don't know what to do. Like a summer rose needs the sun and the rain, I need your sweet love to ease all the pain. I just don't know what to do with myself. Just don't know what to do with myself. Baby, if your new love ever turns you down, come on back, I will be around just waiting for you. Oh, I don't know what else to do. I don't know what else to do with myself.
I know Tommy's singing in England, and I know, as a matter of fact, I know this story because there's a group in Barcelona called the Velvet Candles. And when my wife and I were in Barcelona, we spent some time with them. And I know that Tommy has been doing some singing with them once in a while.
Yeah, he's I just talked to Tommy. I called Tommy last Sunday. Actually, it was like about 3 o'clock in the morning here. And it was about, I guess, about 10 over there, and we talked for about an hour, because we've been knowing each other that long, and we had a lot to talk about. I hadn't talked to him in a few years.
Wow. Wow. 1962, so let's talk about Any Day Now. Now, that was a backrack tune, right?
Yes, oh, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened was that song... Bert and Hal had talked to Tommy Hunt, and they actually did a demo with Tommy with that song. And Bert came to the office one day, and Florence said that, you know, that she was going to go ahead and do it with Tommy. And Bert told her no. He said, no, we've changed our mind, Chuck Jackson.
Uh-huh.
So she said, but, you know, Tommy, you've already... told Tommy, he said, I'm sorry, but Chuck Jackson's going to do this. And that's how I got the song.
Wow.
Any day now, I will hear you say, goodbye, my love, and you'll be on your way. Then my wild, beautiful bird, you will have flown. Oh, any day now, I'll be all alone. Oh, any day now, when your restless eyes meet someone new, oh, my sad.
that surprise. Then the blue shadow will fall all over town. Oh, any day now, love will let me die. If you don't want to stay until you're gone forever, I'll be holding on all your life, holding you this way, begging you to stay any day now. When the clock strikes go, you call it off. And then my tears will flow. Then the blue shadows will fall all over time. Oh, any day now, love will let me die. Cause you won't be around. Don't fly away, my beautiful bird. Don't fly away.
And we stay in touch too. I talk to Bern a lot.
At one particular point, your contract was bought out. And that was, I guess, from Scepter One. Am I right about
well,
that?
Well, it wasn't bought out.
Uh-huh.
See, that's how people get things mixed up. It wasn't bought. It was actually bought out,
yeah.
But I bought it out.
Uh-huh.
What happened was I was on tour, and we were doing, when we finished this tour, we were going to be going to Philadelphia for a disc jockey convention. And I was supposed to be the music at the DJ event, and I called Florence and I asked her, because DJs don't pay you, the record company takes care of your expenses. So I called her and I told her that I was bringing my full band, and would she take care of the musicians? So she said no. I said, well, this is a disc jockey convention. Now, the record company, you got to do this. She said, I don't have to do anything.
Mm.
So I said, you got to be kidding. I said, well, if you don't do this, I'm leaving. She said, if you can buy your contract, then you can leave.
Huh.
But she didn't think I could get the money.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay. So I called Smokey.
Right.
And I told him what had just happened. And I said, and Smokey had told me if I ever left Scepter to come to Motown.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I think I'm going to leave Scepter. He said, well, let me call Barry. And the funny thing, we didn't have, the cell phones then. So I was on tour. So I had stopped at a phone booth on the road, out in the country.
Wow.
And when I called him, so he said, let me call you back. I said, well, you can't call me back because I'm not going to be at this phone. I'll call you back. He said, so call me back tomorrow. So I called Florence at that same booth. I called her and I said, I want my contract. She said, well, if you bring me $12,000, you can have it.
Wow.
So I said, okay. And I hung up. And then the next day I spoke to Smokey. And he said he spoke to Barry, and Barry said, yes, to come on.
Wow.
So I told Smokey I needed an advance, and I told him much more than that. So he said, he talked to Barry and he called me back at home. I was at home by then. And he said, Barry said, no problem, you know, that he would give me that money. So I went to Detroit, got the check from them, came back, and I went to Scepter. And I walked in the office, and Florence was looking at me, because I called her before I got there and told her that I was coming in to get my release. And she said, well, come on. So I walked in, and she had the papers on her desk, because she really didn't think that I could do it.
Right.
And she, you know, she didn't, and she did, and it wasn't, you know how things get out in our world.
Yep.
You find out, but nobody knew what I was doing, so she didn't hear anything.
Right.
So when I walked into the office and told her that I was ready for my contract, she said, there it is right there, laying on the desk. You can just leave a check where you put, where you, when you pick up the contract. And I reached into my pocket and pulled out this check for $12,000 and put it on her desk and walked out.
A lot of money in those days. Yeah.
Well, I bought my contract, and I really did not want to leave Scepter. I really didn't.
Yeah.
But Motown was like family to me, too, so.
Yeah. Some friends of mine are producing Good Golly Miss Molly, the Lloyd Price story, and it's my friend Don Teague. And it was Phil Ramone, but Phil passed away in the middle of it, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One of the things about Lloyd was the fact that he owned everything, man. Every song, he owned the record company, he owned the stuff, whatever. And he put all the money in his pocket. And different than when I was a dean in the Bronx, Jimmy Keys from the Chords, I had his kids in my school, and they weren't great kids. You know, he was in my office all the time. And he died pretty much penniless, and you got to say, he's a guy that wrote Shaboom. How could a guy like that die with no money in his pocket? Mm. And yet, that was the business, you know?
Well, you know, Lloyd Price is my hero. He has been like my roadmap.
Wow.
To how to do business and how to always have a piece of the rock.
Right.
You know, and that today, I talked to Lloyd. Lloyd and I are going to be doing a show together in January.
Wow.
In Fatita the Heater.
Uh-huh.
In Philadelphia.
Ooh, Papa Doo, how do you do? My name is the Gator with the Heater, the big boss with the big hot sauce, Jerry Blavitt, and you know who you're listening to? My man, Mike Miller, ladies and gentlemen, the man who knows everything in the land with the music, the stories, and the sound on Harmony Street.
Hi, this is Lloyd Price, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
And, Lloyd, you know, I talked to Lloyd a couple of days ago.
Wow.
Matter of fact,
wow.
I called him last night.
I know they've been trying to get the Good Golly Miss Molly thing off the ground. When you talk to him again, mention Don Teague. Don was a friend of mine. He's actually an eye doctor, a very successful eye doctor. He's the eye doctor for the Yankees, and you know. But he also, years ago, was a DJ in Ridgefield, Connecticut. He played only doo-wop and R&B. So,
yeah, I think Lloyd told me about him.
Yeah, that's Donnie Teague. As a matter of fact, I'm going to see Don this, let's see, October 25th. I'm emceeing a show for Rob Albany's Lar, and Jimmy Charles will be on the show. Norman Fox will be on the show.
Where is that?
This is in Lauderdale on October 25th.
Well, on the 25th, yeah. I'm doing a tribute to Little Jimmy Scott.
Wow.
Yeah, here in New York at the Abyssinia Baptist Church.
Wow. I got
and
some... Yeah, go ahead.
Sam Moore is going to be one of the guests.
Wow.
I don't know the whole list, but it's going to be a lot of people there.
Wow.
Bonnie Raitt, I don't know whether she's going to make it or not.
Love Bonnie.
But she was a good friend of Lil Jimmy's.
Well, you know, what's funny is Bonnie was down here in Boca, and of course, at the end of her show, she says, hey, I'm going to bring a friend out. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He lives here in Boca. He's your buddy. Yeah, and I'm going to do a few tunes with him. Ladies and gentlemen, Dion DiMucci. And, of course, Dion came out, did the last 10 minutes with her because, you know, he's a neighbor down here. And, you know, and that was cool. You know, oh, Bonnie is, let me tell you, she does some tunes, you get that little rasp in her voice, and then she does other tunes where she does a ballad and she opens up and she's clear as a bell. And you say she does both sides of the needle, you know?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
She really loves what she's doing.
Oh, yeah, you know. I keep forgetting that was a great tune.
I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. Forgetting you don't want me no more. I keep forgetting that you told me that you didn't want me around anymore. But these stupid old feet just head for your street like they've done so many times before. And the stubborn old fist on the end of my wrist start knocking on the old front door. I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. I keep forgetting you don't want me no more. I keep forgetting about those heartbreaking nights and those heartbreaking things that you said. Though I know in my heart we're drifting apart, still I can't believe our love is dead. Though it's plain as can be that you're finished with me, I just can't get it through my head. I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. I know in my heart we've drifted apart, still I can't believe our love is dead. Though it's plain as can be that you're finished with me, I just can't get it through my head. I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. I keep forgetting you don't love me no more. No!
Yes, that was Lieber and Stoller.
Yeah. The big thing with the Lieber and Stoller thing was the Only in America tune, you know, they wanted to give it to the Drifters, and they said, how are we going to have the Drifters sing I Can Grow Up to Be President? So they didn't think they wanted to do that, so they gave it.
Yeah.
Drifters did it on an album, and then they gave it to Janie Merkins. But I love all these little hidden stories, you know, because...
Well, let me give you another little story.
Sure.
Burt Bacharach did the arrangement on I Keep Forgetting.
Uh-huh.
And we're in the studio, and they're putting down a track, you know, with just a musician before I would do the overdub.
Right.
And... I'm sitting at the controls with the engineer, and Bert is in there with the musician, and he keeps cutting the song off. Once it got started, he'd cut it off after he did about 8 to 16 bars. He'd cut it.
Wow.
And he would walk around scratching his head, and so Lieber and Stoller, I could see that they were getting a little frustrated. So they said, Bert, what's wrong? He said, I don't know. And he came into the booth where we were, and he said, there's something wrong. I don't know. And he said, I don't hear something that's going in my head, but I can't hear it out there. And during that time, everybody smoked.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting there smoking, and
right.
I put my cigarette out in the ashtray. And he picked the ashtray up, and he threw the cigarette butts in the garbage can. And he took the, and you remember how the ashtrays used to have, the bottom of them were cloth.
Yep.
And they had like rocks or something in the bottom.
Yep.
So he picked that up and he started shaking it.
Ah.
He said, "That's it. That's it." He went back in the studio and they started the song. And when the song had started, you could hear.
Wow.
That's an ashtray.
Wow. There was that little beanbag thing in the bottom, yeah, right?
Yeah. The beanbag. That's what it's called. That's
right. Yeah.
Beanbag bottom. That's
wow.
It.
Well, that's real production, man.
I'm telling you, that's right.
Yeah. No, that's pretty good stuff, man. People,
but he always did something. There was always something unique in his sessions that you would never believe that where that sound came from.
Well, I guess that's why you got the big bucks.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
exactly, because he is a creator.
Tell him I'm not home with Doris Troy.
Every time I call you on the phone, they tell me that you're not at home. But last night when I called you, before I said hello, I could hear you. If by chance you found somebody new and you don't know what you say or do, I'd feel better when I called you if you asked me not to fall.
Working with me on the road,
right.
And she was also doing some background work for some commercials that I was doing then.
Uh-huh.
And she told Luther that she had this song that, for me. So Luther told me about it, so I said, of course. So we went in and we were recording the song, and it was completely empty. I said, there should be something else happening in here, Doris. She said, yeah, me.
Wow.
And she came into the studio with me, and we did the song.
Ah, that's a cool story. Now, what kind of commercials were you doing?
At that time, I was doing Budweiser, Coca-Cola, and I was doing a furniture store. I forgot the name of it. Yeah. Now. It was local. But I was doing Budweiser and Coke. And during that time, you know, it was basically all black station.
Okay.
That played, you know, our commercial.
Right. You know, when you had, you know, guys like Cal Jackson and WWRL and, you know, the End of the Dial stuff. As a matter of fact, you know, I was at Rye Playland years ago with Don K. Reed, and Hal Jackson was in the audience, and we were doing a show, my group was in it, yada, yada. And I said to Don, isn't that Hal Jackson? We took a picture, the three of us. And then he told me a story later on, years later, and he said to me, Hal Jackson was my mentor. I was on a class trip in junior high school. We went down to the radio station, and I was knocking on the glass. Hal was on the radio, and he motioned to me, and he said he invited me in, and he spoke to me, you know, and he says, that's why I wanted to become a DJ. He said, and Hal Jackson has always been Don K. Reed's, like, idol. And so I framed the picture and I sent it to him. He has it on his mantle. I don't know what I'm doing in the picture, but anyway, it's Hal Jackson and Don K. Reed, you know.
Wow.
And it's a cool thing, you know, because you know, Hal was you know, a heck of a guy.
Yeah, I've been knowing him all of my career.
Yeah.
And when I first started, he was there for me. I mean,
cool.
Personally, he was like my. I just, my father at that time.
Wow.
Because he always told me what to and what not to.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad I got to meet him at one point. You did a tune with Maxine Brown. Something you got.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the show that I'm doing with Lord for Gita the Heater.
Ah, Jerry.
In January.
Jerry Blavitt.
Maxine and I are going to do at least three of our songs together.
How cool is that?
Oh, something you got, baby.
Something I've got, baby.
You ought to know.
So bad to see.
Daddy's home.
man wrote and told me you had two drops in your eyes.
Daddy's home.
He knows me, Jerry. You know, he's a character. He's still in. He's in great shape, man. He runs like 3 miles a day.
Oh, Jerry, man.
Yeah, he's.
I that's what he said to me. He called me a couple of days. Well, actually, today is Tuesday. He called me. Actually, he called me Monday. Monday. He called me Monday.
I know what he said. He said, my man, Chuck.
Well, no, you know what he said? He came on. I kept it because he came on and I was doing something and I couldn't find my phone.
Uh-huh.
And he started singing. I don't want to cry. And he went in, you know, any day now.
Right.
And I wake up crying. He was putting all of them together, just tagging them.
Uh-huh.
And I said, who is this? And then he said, Chuck, this is Gita. And then my phone just lit up. I just picked it up.
Uh-huh.
And we started talking. And he told me about, you know, we're going to be working with the Philadelphia Symphony.
Ah, wow.
And it's going to be incredible.
Wow. Well, you toured with the Supremes and the Four Tops, of course.
Yes.
And, you know, it's funny, I did a very extensive 3-hour interview with Mary Wilson, and she says, and her name was Diane, and never mind, it was Diane, and any one of us could have been the lead, and that's how it is, and yada, yada, yada.
I heard that so many times.
You know, of course, you know, other groups, you know, I'm friendly with the girls, you know, from the Vandellas, you know, Annette, and those ladies, and they tell me some Motown stories, you know, they tell me the good and the bad side. They said we didn't know what we were signing. We were 16 years old, and years later, Berry just said, hey, it's over. You know,
well, you know, that happened to everybody.
Yeah.
Motown was just more successful.
Yeah, no,
but all of us signed those contracts because we didn't know any better.
No, I understand, you know, all of that. Well, you know, they were, a lot of people don't know that they were very successful backing up Marvin Gaye as the Vels. And, you know, when Berry decided to put Martha Reeves in a group, he just said, come here, Vels. You are the Vandellas now, and, you know, go do it. So, and when you're the boss, you can do that.
That's right. And when you're doing it right,
yep,
you stay the boss.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Yes.
Are you lonely for me, baby?
Are you lonely for me, baby? Oh, yes, I am.
Are you lonely for me, baby?
I'm coming home. Jacksonville. I'm gonna get on it, baby. You know I will. Will you try? Come on and try. You could get all the pain I brought here. Go on and cry. Go ahead and cry, baby. I know I'm the one who taught you to be lonely, baby.
Lonely,
lonely. I'm lonely, baby. I'm lonely for you.
Are you lonely for me,
baby? Yes, I am.
Are you lonely for me, baby?
Oh, it's my last bus to Jacksonville. Are you my sweet baby? Are you here? Tell your friend it's the end. I will never.
I know that tune.
Well, you know what? God, I forgot. Anyway, he brought the song to me when I was accepted. And I was getting on the elevator one day, and this guy came up to me, and he said, are you Chuck Jackson? I said, yes. He said, I'm a fan. And he said, and I've been riding. I've been trying to run into you in this building you know, for a long time. I
right.
finally did it. So I took him upstairs and stepped in, and he played this song for me. And it was "Are You Lonely for Me, Baby?"
Uh-huh.
And I loved it, and I told Luther about it. So Luther, at the time, Luther said, "No, Chuck," he said, "we're doing this other project." You know, that was with Bert and Lieber and Stoller, you know, so you can't just break away and go do, you know, other stuff.
Right.
So I told him no. So what he did was he went on and got a deal, and he did it himself.
Huh.
And down the road, I had to record it because it was really meant for me. So I just uh-huh. recorded it and did my touch on it.
Right, right. Well, it's very interesting because I have a very good friend that I have down here that I've known for years, and I'm actually doing a project with him now. And I know that you went with ABC for a while.
Yes, when I left Motown.
Yes, my good friend is Dennis Lambert from Lambert and Potter, and I just spoke to him early this morning, and he told me to say hello to you.
Yep. Yeah, God, that's been a long time.
Because I know you recorded a bunch of his tunes. I don't think he produced them, but I know he said that you did record a bunch of tunes that he wrote.
Yes. Oh, my Lord.
Yep. So, you know, I don't want to say...
Well, tell him I said hello.
Oh, I will. You know, this is like, hey, Chuck Jackson, this is your life, you know. and now I'd like to bring in your third grade teacher, Miss Bloom.
Miss who?
Miss Bloom. I don't know.
Well, actually, she was Miss Prince.
Oh, well, if you remember that.
Yeah.
You know.
This is Your Life, a program for all America. And now here he is, Mr. This Is Your Life himself, Ralph Edwards.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being with us on This Is Your Life. Tonight, let's turn the lights on and watch carefully our honored guest whom we're about to surprise tonight. Tonight, This Is Your Life.
Chuck Jackson, a lot of people don't realize how much recording you did because, you know, they know that list of tunes that they're familiar with, but they don't know how many tunes you actually recorded. You were in the studio a lot.
A lot. I was, during that time, I was in the studio and on the road. I just don't know how I did it. And I'd come in, go in the studio, and go straight to the Apollo. And as a matter of fact, today... I have the record. It's in the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
Smithsonian.
Right.
I'm in the Smithsonian as headlining in 1 year more shows than anybody in the history of the Apollo.
Wow.
So it seemed like I was there every other week.
Well, that's unbelievable, you know.
Yes.
I'm needing you, I'm wanting you. Do you remember that tune?
Hi, honey. Tis good to be home. You say we're having company tonight? Listen, baby. Let's do something before I get here. Let's sneak upstairs and dim the lights. Lock the door. Cause I got something to tell you. You won't believe your ears. Let's make love, baby, tonight. Why should we wait? It's getting so late. I can hardly wait. Cause I've been needing you. Oh, baby, I'm wanting you. Let's hurry up before company comes and spoil our fun. Turn down the lights and lock the door. Tell me, what are you waiting for? Cause I've been needing you. Oh, baby, I'm wanting you. Listen, all day I couldn't wait to come home and find you here all alone, just waiting for me.
baby, wait impatiently.
So before our friends drop by, what you say that you and I sit quietly upstairs and close the door? What are we waiting for? And if it's all right with you,
yes, it's all right.
It's all right with me. Turn down the lights and lock the door. Tell me, what are we waiting for? Oh, baby, I'm wanting you. Turn down the lights and lock the door. Tell me, what are we waiting for? 'Cause I'm needing you. Oh, baby, I'm wanting you. Turn down the lights and lock the door. Tell me, what are we waiting for? 'Cause I've been needing you all day long on my job. I couldn't wait to get home. So baby, baby, turn down the lights and lock the door. Tell me, what are we waiting for? 'Cause I've been needing you. Oh yes, I have. Oh baby, I'm so glad to be home. So turn down the lights and lock the door. Tell me, what are we waiting for? 'Cause I've been needing you. Yes, I have. I won't let you go till you tell me you're gonna turn down the lights.
Yeah, that was for Sylvia.
Uh-huh.
That was Sugar Hill.
Uh-huh.
That was Joe Robinson. Sylvia was, you remember Mickey and Sylvia? Sylvia,
sure, I do, yeah. I want to give you some love. I think Luther probably was involved in that too, but that was with EMI.
I co-wrote that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
You did it with Bob Marley's producer, and all you guys went to Jamaica and talked about it.
Yes, yes. I want to give you some love.
Never.
never try to resist. Oh no, just let my love come tumbling in into our lives again, saying, "Ooh, I love you, and I want you to know right now. Ooh, I love you, and I want you to know right now, oh girl."
Well, speaking of the variety shows, what do you think of The Voice and American Idol? What's your feeling on that? Because I've gotten mixed reviews from you know, big stars in the business as far as how they feel about it.
Well, I think a lot of times on The Voice, it's disappointing because I don't think, and I'm I'm going to say it. I don't think a lot of people that they have as judges are qualified.
Agreed. I agree with that.
I didn't want to say it. But, you know, I mean, really, I'm sitting here some, like last night, I just turned it off. Because I hear a voice and I'm listening and I hear something in there. And then they say, well, I'm not too, no, they don't, you know, they don't turn around.
Yeah.
And then there's somebody who gets up and almost talking.
Right.
And they say, I love that.
Well, because
I love that.
I guess it's political too. And you know, it's a reality
you
show.
Know.
It's a reality show first, you know?
Exactly.
And that's, you know.
Exactly.
Because I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to say it, I'm going to get emails on this, is that for Harry Connick to sit there and bash a lot of these guys, you know, the way he does, And then I heard his performance on American Idol when he sat down behind a piano. And the first two verses of the song, I had to put my ear near the speaker on the TV and going, is he singing or is he not? You know, he wasn't projecting. He's a great musician and a great arranger and a great jazz guy and all
yes,
of that.
He is.
And he's a cocky
yes,
actor,
he
but he's not a great vocalist.
He's not a great vocalist. And he's on a show determining who can and who can't.
Yep. He's not a great
vocalist. That bothers me. So a lot of times I really cannot watch it because the first thing that goes through my mind
yep.
is supposing I would have had to go through that in order to get to where I'm going.
Right, right.
You know, and that's why a lot of people aren't going to make it today because they've got non-professional people, I mean vocally,
well,
determining whether they're going to make it or not.
And you could ruin a lot of guys. I remember when I was younger, man, if somebody, and you know, I know, you know when you have a good day and a bad day. You know, when you're out there and on stage so many times, I mean, you know whether you sang great or whether you were climbing uphill because it happens. You know, you don't always hit a home run. But to have somebody tell you, nope, you know, that could crush you for a whole couple of weeks.
Yes. That's right. And that confidence that you thought you had
right.
was just ruined.
I know. You know.
Yes.
So
it's hard for me to watch that. It really is.
Nah, I hear you. But, you know, if we take it for what it is. Right down here in Southern Florida, and probably where you are, you go into these little nooks and crannies, a little club, a little bar, whatever, and all of a sudden you see somebody behind a piano singing, and you go, oh, my God, how come nobody knows about this person? And,
exactly.
And they're going to stay there forever. Because they don't know what
exactly.
to do.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
So, you know. You're on the board of the Rhythm and Blues Foundation, which, and rightfully so. After all those years of headlining, you did the Paramount with Alan Freed, I'm sure.
Alan Freed, I did with the Dell Vikings.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, there was Clay Cole.
Yes. And, wow, I love Clay.
Right. He was a terrific guy. And did you?
Yes.
I know you did the Brooklyn Fox with Murray because I think I saw you. I saw you there.
Yes, godly, Murray the K.
Right.
Murray the K was the first one to call me Soul Brother number one.
Uh-huh.
And back in that time, nobody wanted that title because then your music wouldn't be played pop.
Right.
If you were soulful, that meant that you were R&B.
Uh-huh.
So nobody would take it. I took it.
Uh-huh. Why not?
And then down the road, all of a sudden, James Brown, when things started to turn, James took it.
I hear you.
But if you go into the records, you'll find that Murray the K was calling me that
yeah.
in 1960.
I do know that. That's what my friend Shelley calls you. He says, oh, you're going to have on Soul Man number one. I said, yes, yes I am.
Yep.
And, of course, you know, there's Cousin Brucey, you know, who's still around
yes.
doing his thing. And
I talked to him.
You did Soul Train, I know that.
Yes.
You know, and that's a trip, you know.
Right, right. I think a lot of times when they have those Soul Train Borges.
Right.
I said, you know, like when I did Soul Train, as a matter of fact, I'm reading a book right now.
Uh-huh.
You remember the magazine, Essence Magazine?
Of course.
Well, the gentleman that co-founded, his name is Edward Lewis.
Uh-huh.
And I'm reading it now. Don Cornelius, at one point, was working with Essence. And I didn't know that until last night. I was reading the book last night. But they became very close because they would advertise his show in the magazine. And he would talk about their magazine on his program.
Right.
And God, so many things. You know, I'm
yeah.
so glad I came along when I did.
No, yeah, no. And so are a lot of other people, you know. Is it true that you were very instrumental in giving Flip Wilson his start?
I wasn't instrumental. I was the equipment.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm sitting in my hotel room, in my motel room, because this is back in the early 60s, in my motel room in Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
and my driver, and it was just on during that time I had just started, so it was just my driver who acted as my driver and my road manager. He came to my room and he said, "Chuck," he said, "I want you to meet someone." And we didn't know anything about homeless, but he was homeless.
Huh.
And he said he's living in the street, and he just got out of the service, and he's a very talented person. He said, "Would you just meet him and, you know, have a talk with him? And there's nobody, you know, traveling but us two, you know, maybe we can take him with us." And I said, "What the heck is he talking about? I'm just going to pick somebody up and take them with me." So anyway, he brings this guy to my room, and we talked for a while, and then he left. Then my man came back, and he said, "You know, tomorrow night, we're going to have," the next day was my birthday, and he said, "We're going to get together and have a few drinks in the lounge." So I said, "Okay." So the next night, I'm in the lounge, and a few friends came by, and Luther Dixon had just bought me a microphone, a cordless mic. And that was like, you know, nobody had ever heard of that when I got it.
You bet.
Yes. And anyway, we're sitting in the lounge, and they got this birthday cake for me. And we're all sitting around drinking and having some cake, and I blew the candle out and the whole bit. And all of a sudden, I hear this person speaking. And I don't know where it's coming from, and everybody gets quiet. Everybody else in the lounge knew what was going on but me.
Uh-huh.
And this person started to tell jokes. And everybody, I mean, people were just almost falling out of their chairs. And then he walked in the door. And it was the guy that he had brought to my room. And he had set it up for me to hear him by surprising me with it. He was so funny that the next day I said, "Okay, we're going to take him with us." And I was on like a mini tour.
Wow.
And I was doing one-nighters. And I took him, we left Georgia and went to North Carolina. And the next event that I did, he had the people just, they had never seen anything like it.
Wow.
I'm coming to New York to the Apollo Theater.
Right.
And my managers at that time were I just had their number in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
The Rifkin brothers were my managers. And I invited them to come to the Apollo and to see this guy. So they came and they saw him and they said, "Yes, Chuck, we want him. And what we'll do, we'll be taking," I forgot how much they said they were going to be taking. But they would be, you know, like 35%, but they would be giving me 10% of it.
Ooh.
So I told them, "No, you take my 10% and give it to his family," because I knew what was happening.
Wow.
You know, with his family. And he was definitely broke. And he lived in Newark. And that's what they did. They gave him back my 10%. And all of a sudden, I see Flip is working in the Catskill.
Right.
And then he was working in Las Vegas. And I said, "Oh, my God." All of a sudden, the name Flip Wilson became a house word.
Wow.
And he never talked to me. He never called me or anything.
Wow.
And it's amazing. I'm with Motown. And I'm Shirley.
Right.
Mary gave a party.
Uh-huh.
And I'm at this party. And who walks in but Flip?
Wow.
Now, let me tell you this story real quick.
Go ahead.
I'm supposed to do the Johnny Carson show.
Uh-huh.
So I show up for rehearsal, and something happened to Johnny, and Flip is taking his place on the Tonight Show.
Uh-huh.
So I do my, you know, we do rehearsal and sound check and stuff, you know, for the TV.
Right.
And then I go back to my dressing room. I'm in my dressing room watching the monitor.
Right.
And Flip does the whole show and doesn't bring me on.
Get out.
And at the end of the show, he said, oh, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so sorry. We run out of time. And we had this other guest, Chuck Jackson. So, you know, just give him, and I came out and sat down, and they went off the air.
Wow.
And that completely broke my heart. But I was at Mary Wilson, and he walked in.
Uh-huh.
And he looked at me, and I could just feel the guilt coming out of him. So at the end of the evening, he said, Chuck, come home with me. So I said, no, I'm not going to do that. He said, please, just do it for me. So I went with him, and we went to his house. He had a Bentley. We went to his house.
Right.
That was right on the ocean. I forgot the name of the town in
right.
L.A.
Right.
But it was just fabulous. And then the next morning, I get up, and he said, Chuck, no, before going to bed, I was going to showing me the bedroom.
Right.
So the bedroom was the master bedroom.
Uh-huh.
He said, you're going to stay in my bedroom. And I said, no, I don't want to stay. He said, no, you're staying in my
All right.
bedroom. So anyway, I stayed. And the next day, I get up and we're going to have breakfast. Malibu, that's where he lives.
Right, right, okay. No, well.
Yeah. And then he said, I want to give you something. And he handed me this wad of money. And I said, no. I said, money can't buy what we've lost.
Wow.
You know, so he said, well, you got to take it. I said, no. I said, if you want to give it to somebody, give it to my wife, because she's the one that suffered the most because
right.
of what you did to me.
Right.
So he did.
Wow.
He had an address on me. He sent it to her.
Wow.
But I wouldn't take a dime from him.
Wow. I thought you were going to tell me you slept in his bed and you woke up with Geraldine.
Somebody else said the same thing. Somebody else, a good friend, said the same thing.
That's funny.
But you know what? Those people that Flip created, he created them while we were on the road.
Wow.
I saw those people before he even started to actually use them on stage.
Wow. Wow.
God bless him, you know.
Yes.
But
I know.
He really did me wrong.
The name is Miss Jones. Geraldine Jones.
I know. People come and go, and, you know, it's like the universe, man. There's no explaining any of that stuff, you know. Just
no,
is,
no, there isn't. And you know what? If it doesn't kill you, it helps you.
Well, I always say, although it's hard to do, man, it's like always take the high road, man. Always take the high road. You know, it's like people do stuff. My wife says to me sometimes, why don't you, these people, you're always hooking people up and you're always doing this and man, and they never, sometimes they don't thank you, this, that, the other, blah, blah. I say, hey, man, just take the high road. You
that's
know,
right.
that's it. Forget it.
That's
you know?
Right.
You know, it's like.
And don't let things get you down. With all of that that happened, I was never down. I would not let it get me down.
You know, anger is like wasted because when you finished throwing yourself around, you still got the problem.
That's know? Right. That's right. And the body is worn out.
Right. Exactly right.
You know. No, you know, you mentioned somebody does 5 miles a day.
Right.
I'm doing now
uh-huh.
6 miles every other day.
Wow.
And I am 77 years old.
Wow. You know what? It's like I haven't worked out in a while. I was always very heavily into working out, you know. And, you know, I got this expression. I say, I had a long year today.
Well, you know what? I don't run.
Yeah.
I do. What I do is I go to the gym and I do like, say 3 miles on the bike.
That's great.
And then I get a rub down.
Wow.
And then I leave the gym and I walk another 3.5 miles.
Cool. You did some recording with Dionne Warwick as well.
Yes.
You know.
Well, Dionne and I go back to right after Maxine and I.
Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff was released in England and not here.
On a sunny afternoon, we said hello, and we've never said goodbye. We'll take it slow, we'll give it a chance to grow. And when we know
that we were born to be the ones to save our lives from other loves that weren't quite right, we'll leave the past behind us, we'll let love come and find us.
There is just one thing I need to know, I wanna know, I've got to know. Did I let myself go? It will be love all over again. If I let myself go, it will mean right from now to the end.
If I let myself go, it'll be love all over again. If I let myself go, it'll never end. Emotion is what I will give to you, to laugh and cry as the years go by. There's just one thing I need to know, I want to know, I've got to know. If I let myself go, it'll be love all over again. If I let myself go, it will be right from now till the end.
You are very big in England, you know. I know I'm not giving you any big news, but you're very big in the UK.
Thank God, yes.
You know,
man, you know what? And
is it true that It's Not Unusual was written for Chuck Jackson?
I was going to tell you that earlier. Yes, it was. And I asked Bert because I heard it. And Bert, at first I was going to do it, and then Bert changed his mind. He went on tour with Marlene Dietrich, and he came back, and all of a sudden, I wasn't doing the song anymore.
Huh.
So I said, what is wrong? And then he said, well, I'm just not going to do it on you. So maybe a month later or so, I hear the song by this guy, Tom Jones. And I said, I had a meeting with Bert, and I said, Bert, why did you do this? He said, and this is back in the 60s.
Right.
He said, Chuck, he said, I can only sell so many records with you. He said, I'm just being honest with you.
Uh-huh.
He said, but I can sell around the world with this man.
Uh-huh.
He said, and that's why I did it.
Wow.
And I never, ever held that against him.
Wow.
Never, ever.
Because I remember being at the Brooklyn Fox with Marie, and I remember the same show. Dionne Warwick sang Don't Make Me Over, and Tom Jones sang It's Not Unusual on the same show.
Wow.
Yep. And they, because I think it was just about the same timing. And the other thing is, you know, when I talked to Benny King, you know, he says, why is it that nobody remembers that I sang I Who Have Nothing? Everybody's out there playing Tom Jones's version and this guy's version and that guy's version because they did it on American Idol. Somebody sang I Who Have Nothing and they never gave credit to Benny King.
Oh, my God.
They gave it to Whitney Houston. And because I did some vocals with Sissy and Thelma years ago, and I remember Whitney was sitting, she was about 13 years old at Media Sound in New York, and she was sitting there going, when are we getting out of here, sucking her teeth, you know, and her mother says, you know, that's my daughter Whitney, she wants to be a model. And all of a sudden, like two or three years later, it comes out this big voice, you know.
Oh, my God. And was it big?
Yeah. Well, you know, she was whatever. The ending was a sad
story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we're all one family. I mean, we were, all of us have been very close for the last 50 years.
Wow.
Dion said to me the last time I talked to her, she said, you know, we've been knowing each other over 50 years. I said, oh, my God.
Wow. Ah. There's a song called I Only Get This Feeling. And another
that
one
was on ABC.
And I Can't Break Away.
I only get this feeling when you walk in the room. I only get this feeling when I smell your sweet perfume. Home soon. My eyes get a little bit brighter. My tongue gets a little bit tighter. My heart beats a little bit stronger. My hands get a little bit warmer, baby. My sweet baby. Oh. I only get this feeling when we dance a little slow. I only get this feeling when I know it's time to go.
You see up in the sky, making circles in the morning sun, flying high in the sky till the day is done. I can't break away. Like a child in his fantasy, punching holes in the walls of reality. Cause all my life I wanted to fly, but I don't have no wings, and I wonder why I can't break away.
I'm enough, don't give up, I'm
a I can't break away.
I'm enough, don't give up, I'm a
Mama told me back when I was young, stand tall, don't crawl, boy, you're number one.
She said,
you can be what you wanna be, but you can't change the course of your destiny. I can't break away.
I'm enough, don't give up.
Your favorite Chuck Jackson tune?
actually, I only get this feeling is one of them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And a song that I adore every time I sing it when I open with it sometimes, Since I Don't Have You.
Oh, you know, yeah, that's the, well, that's a Pittsburgh song, you know. Jimmy Beaumont's, you know, and Joe Rock, you know.
Yeah.
I see Jimmy all the time because I, you know, I see him in shows that we do together and all of that, you know. And
well, please tell him I said hello.
Oh, absolutely.
I haven't seen him since we were kids.
Wow. You're not interested in going back in the studio and you know, you have enough tunes to fall back on, I guess, in your portfolio, but my feeling is that some of those Chuck Jackson tunes that don't get played regularly should be heard, you know?
Well, you know, they should be heard, but they're not going to be respected like I want. No, I want everything about what I have done in life to be respected.
I hear you.
Not just put out there and hope somebody does this, hope somebody listens to it. No. You know what is very important to me, and I get it every day, and it makes me feel just good every day, is that people still remember my work.
Uh-huh.
And that is most important to me. And it seems like every other day I'll get a call from somebody around the country, around the world, somebody will call me and say, "I guess what I'm listening to."
Uh-huh.
Mr. Jack, wanted to hear from Cleveland, Ohio.
I'm telling you, the next time you do a review, I would like to audition to be a part of your show. And this is to put a smile on your face. I think I did this whole routine to your whole album here that I have on CD. And I want you to put a pole on stage, and I want to come out of the audience, Mr. Jackson, and work that pole to all your music. I'm just saying, Mr. Jackson, with much love.
Can you hear that?
I did.
Yeah, she wants a pole on stage.
Uh-huh.
She wants to come out of the audience.
Uh-huh.
And now listen, that woman is in her late 70s.
Wow.
That's what's so funny about it.
Uh-huh.
She wants to come to my show and we're going to have a pole and she wants to slide down the pole.
and put out the fire.
Yeah. I just thought it was so, you know, it's just, when you get those kind of calls, that's what makes my whole life so interesting, is that people still care.
No, that's fabulous stuff, you know, and, you know, really and truly, I don't even know if you're aware of how many people love you. You go here and you go there, but, an awful lot of people have an awful lot of respect for you.
Thank God.
That's just how it is.
And, you know, another thing that is so important to me is that my brethren have a lot of respect, because I respect them.
Right.
And we are so close, the ones that are still here. And we work together, we talk, you know, and I've been doing a lot of work with the Apollo for the last 9 years.
Right.
So, like, when I can use them, I try to use them as much as possible.
Right, I hear you. And also, you know, the way it is nowadays, unless you have your own musicians that are really, really beholden to you, when you go out, you're always working with different musicians, and, you know, every night is different.
Now, you know what? I have my own group.
Cool.
My guys have been with me over 20-some years.
Wow, that's great. That's good. Because that makes half the difference, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I want to say a couple of words about Phil. Phil is, like, really protective of Chuck. Basically, I'm really thrilled to have been able to catch up with you. It was very, very important for me to hear about your story and hear it from you.
That's the bottom line.
You know, I mean,
that's the bottom line.
Because people always think they know, and people, secondhand information is always not such great information.
It's called what it is, secondhand.
Yeah, right, exactly right. What would you say to fans who were there way back in the beginning and have Chuck Jackson 45s still in their jukebox as we do downstairs?
I would say, I still love you.
Uh-huh.
Just like I did before.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you so much.
Chuck, it's been my pleasure to spend this time with you. You know, you're one of
mine,
my...
Mine, Mike, mine.
You're one of my heroes in this business, and I'm just thrilled to have done this. I'm thrilled
to have
done this.
Well, you just became one of mine.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Have a great week, Chuck, and we'll keep in touch, and I hope to be speaking to you soon.
All right, Mike.
You be well.
And we'll be talking any day now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay. All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye, buddy.
dime for each and every time I've missed you. Long to kiss you, I'd be a millionaire. If I had a quarter for every drop of water that fell from my eyes because of your light, I'd be a millionaire. I can't help the heartache or the pain and the time. Just 1 cent for every lonely moment I've spent thinking of you, wondering what to do. I'd be a millionaire.
For me, guess I'll try and make some friends today, 'cause tomorrow just may not be. It's just one of those days when things seem to go my way. I feel like I'm a piece of the sky. Look out, I'm getting ready to fly. Gonna fly, gonna fly. I'm gonna get me a piece on the rock.
Me a piece.
Gonna break that rock into little pieces. Give some of the pieces to my friends.
Some of the pieces
to the creases. Our friendship will never end. It's just one of those days when things seem to go my way. I feel like I'm a piece of the sky. Look out, I'm getting ready to fly. Gonna fly, gonna fly. I'm gonna get me a piece of the rock.
Me a piece.
Gonna break that rock into little pieces. Give some of the pieces to my friends.
Some of the pieces
to the pieces. Our friendship will never end. I just got to be, I just wanna be on the sunny side of the street. I just wanna be, I just got to be on the sunny side of the street. Thank you.
face up, fellas. What's more, when the fire's lost its glitter? What's sweet when all else seems so bitter? What's cold when your dreams start to wither? And give strength when you feel like a quitter?
looked into each other's eyes on the road that led us to Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's heart and found the road was free and clear to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes when we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes and found the road that led us to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. Somehow we found our love drifting away. There was nothing I could do, nothing to say. We looked into each other's eyes and found a lonely thoroughfare on Harmony Street. Open up your heart, recall how it is.